The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Well, baseball is still 2 weeks away, but that doesn't mean we don't have our first web gem of the 2020 season. Check out this ridiculous catch from Tigers center fielder Derek Hill. Look at him going back and making the grab during Detroit's first game of summer camp. How good does this feel to actually watch a baseball player making a great catch in the outfield? Look at that. He juggles it and actually catches it with the bare hand. Boy, the more you watch it, the more you like it. Listen, it's nice to have some sports to watch. We have MLS action coming your way in an hour here on ESPN. That's why we're on at a special time. We'll get up with you from now until 9 o'clock Eastern time, as we are about 60 minutes from that, and we have a ton of action to get to this morning. A lot of news from the world of football, and that is where we will begin. It is time to get up Deadline day approaching for Dak. I will give you 7 reasons why he shouldn't even consider signing a deal with Dallas. Plus, young star quarterbacks abound. Of these upcoming QBs, which one would you take to start your team? And the latest from college is ominous, to say the least. We will start with the fears for a fall without football as we get up with you for the next 60 minutes right here on ESPN. And the top story yesterday, the Ivy League announcing it has ruled out playing all sports this fall due to the pandemic, becoming the first Division I conference to do so. The conference has not yet decided on the status of winter and spring sports or if fall sports could be played in the spring. SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey now on if the Ivy League decision will impact what the SEC does.
I don't think that the announcement today is any inflection point for decision making. Now, when you look at what's happening, those are the real inflection points for us. I want to be optimistic, but the reality is publicly, we have to discipline ourselves to remain healthy as a culture. And that relates to some of the behaviors we've seen that have caused the spread to accelerate. And I've been optimistic, but I'm prepared that optimism is not reality.
Here's the back page of the New York Daily News this morning. Top of the class, Ivy League cancels fall sports. It might just be the beginning. With more, here's our Heather Dinich, who was with us live an hour ago here on Get Up.
Ivy League Executive Director Robin Harris told me yesterday that this was based on campus policies. The 8 Ivy League campuses' COVID-19 policies, she said, made it impractical to have fall competition. She pointed out that there were travel restrictions for coaches, players, faculty, staff. There's also stringent social distancing measures on campus, along with restrictions for visitors and gatherings of no more than 25 to 50 people at some places. So this just made it, frankly, impossible to hold fall competition.
All right, let's get into this here. I've got my crew back. Dominique, stay with us, and Paul Feinbaum and Reese Davis. I'll start with you, Reese. Of course, you host College Game Day. You're accustomed to traveling around the country every week and being around all of these fans. Here is something that feels like it could be the first domino. What are your thoughts on what we saw yesterday?
Well, I understand the Ivy League's decision to do so. I don't think that it is necessarily going to have a huge impact on the decisions that the other conferences make. Now, they may well wind up in the same place.
We seem to have lost Reese's feed there. We'll come back. Let's leave the box up there, though, with that shot, because it did freeze in sort of a flattering expression, which never seems to happen to me. But Reese is just that handsome of a man. And speaking of handsome men, Paul, let me come to you on the significance of this decision. So Reese is telling us, and he was with us an hour ago, saying something similar, that he doesn't necessarily see this as the first domino and then the others to follow. How do you see it?
I see it as a very negative sign, and I think Greg Sankey said it all in that bite a minute ago, Greeny. Optimism is not reality. That's the first time I've heard some realistic conversations from people at his level. In the past, they've been selling, like all of us, positivity, and we've been buying it as much as we can, talking about full stadiums. That's not reality. The reality is that the college football season has virtually no chance right now of starting on time. It may not start at all. And I think it's time that the college football fans who really want to see football more than anything in the world, other than maybe being healthy, need to start accepting the fact that it's probably not going to happen.
So, Dominique, I'll come to you here as a former player, because one of the options on the table is moving the college football season to the spring in some fashion. It wouldn't be what we're accustomed to seeing. Now, you were a third-round pick when you came into the NFL. You weren't a guy who, going into your senior year, knew for sure you were going to be a super high pick. So if they had moved your senior year season to the spring, would you have played those games even if they would finish something a matter of weeks before the draft?
Probably not. I think getting ready for the draft and being able to show up to the combine and all that stuff really matters. I think after you've played 3 years, as I did, of football at a high level, I think your film is your film, and you would do the other things that are important, because you would hate to have to play or to play this season in the spring and then potentially not get drafted and maybe come back and play another season in the spring and then be entered into a draft that is with more, that has more players than the one before, which makes it even more difficult. Then your talent isn't nearly as important as how many people you're competing against. So I think trying to keep things as normal for those guys, even if you're not a number one overall pick, I think you have to really consider not playing, or at least making sure that you're done playing before the start of combine preparation and the draft and all that stuff. You don't want to get stuck in no man's land when you're stuck being forced into an overpopulated draft 2 years from now.
I think we do have Reese back here. So, Reese, I'll come back to you. What would you envision that looking like? Let's just live in a world where they decide we have to try and move this to the spring in some fashion. And in your best estimation, what would that look like?
I think it would probably have to be conference only. It would have to be a much much shorter season, condensed season. It would still be popular. People would be hungry for football. But my biggest concern, or my biggest reason for skepticism about the ability to do it, is because unless we know for sure that it's going to be more viable or safer than the fall, I don't see how it's any more feasible to play in the spring. But the things that you and Dominique have talked about are the biggest concerns. But if they do, I think it would be a much shorter season. It would likely be conference only, or certainly limited to a geographical region to limit travel. So that's what it would look like in theory, I think, if it comes to that. But I'm skeptical for all of the reasons that you guys have talked about.
Paul, there's a lot of potential fallout from this. And, of course, college football fans, and you talk to them every single day, they love their sport. But there are other ways that this is impactful. We saw that Stanford has canceled a number, I think it was 11 varsity sports or something like that, canceled. That announcement came yesterday. Should we expect to see a lot more of that sort of thing across the country if it continues to go in this direction?
Absolutely. And Greeny, that's one of the most well-endowed schools in terms of resources in the country before we get to the college football season. If we don't have a college football season and no spring, some of these athletic departments are going to be wiped out. I mean, they're not going to be existing any longer because they need that money so badly. They've already lost March Madness money, and that touches a lot of conferences, every conference in this country. So there is much at stake, and the real battle is, do we start the season and maybe have it truncated or dissolved altogether, or do we put it off, make less money in the spring? It's a brutal choice for commissioners right now, and the clock is ticking.
And I guess, Reese, I would just ask you, I've known you for a long time, I know how much this stuff matters to you, and you love it. But what are your thoughts as you see all of this happening and this conversation swirling, something that 6 months ago, none of us would ever have imagined possible, that we could go through an entire fall without college football?
A lot of tentacles to it, Greeny. I mean, the first thing you think of is, just as a fan and someone who loves the sport, it would be incredibly sad. I think it's also something that's unifying for people, and certainly, the country needs something to feel good about, and football can provide that, particularly college football. Understanding, goes without saying, that safety is of the utmost importance. But I think the other thing that it does is, you look at the various tentacles of this, is that if they do play in the midst of a pandemic, and I imagine this is a different topic for a different day, it leaves no doubt, which I know you and I are largely in agreement on this, that college football players have tremendous value in the marketplace. So, the idea that they are, you know, just students who happen to play football. I don't know that anyone really believes that in their heart of hearts, but it really underscores the value that they have. Now, the one thing I will say, and I do want to point this out, I don't think for a second that there are people who are acting without compassion or care for the players. Whether you agree or disagree or believe it's naive or not, these administrators and these trainers and coaches do firmly believe that they are best positioned to care for these players medically because of the facilities and the resources that they have, and that they are better positioned to care for them in the event of an outbreak. Now, people can disagree with that, but I just pointed out to say that I don't believe that they're acting without care or concern for the welfare of the players.
I agree with that, too. But, Paul, to give you the final word on this, the word that might be attached to them then would become essential. Do you think that however this thing plays out over the next 8 to 12 months, that whenever we return to whatever the new normal actually is, that the dynamic here in the way that Reese is describing changes?
Well, I think you're going to see a dramatic paradigm shift regardless, Greeny. And I don't want to hear Mark Emmert and anyone at Indianapolis at the NCAA headquarters, you know, talk about the amateurism. I mean, that's out the window. With the NIL coming down the road, perhaps instituted by Congress, players are going to start demanding more. And not only that, because of the recent conversation that we've all been having since George Floyd, I think we're going to hear some of that before we even get to a season, if that is still in debate. So, yes, what we have today, both athletically and off the field, are not going to be recognizable a year from today.
Paul and Reese, I really appreciate both of you guys getting up early this morning and sharing this, and we will continue to cover it as we work our way towards what we still hope will be a football season this fall, but we'll have to wait and see. Meanwhile, back to the NFL, and yesterday, ESPN releasing, and Jeremy Fowler doing a great job, the list of the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL, and this again was in a poll conducted by ESPN with 50 NFL personnel people, and no surprise at the top with Patrick Mahomes, and you see the list there, the top 10. We spent a lot of the day talking about it yesterday. But Dominique, one of my favorite episodes of Seinfeld was the Festivus episode, which has the legendary airing of grievances. And I'm told you have a list of grievances with this list, and now we're going to hear about it.
Yeah, I'm sure Rob will agree with me on this one. Lamar Jackson is way too low. That's my first grievance, is Lamar Jackson was the MVP of the league last year. He's the most unique player we have in the NFL, and he is the catalyst for their offense. And his offensive running ability is also the catalyst of their defense. He is the most special player in the league right now. Aaron Rodgers is the next grievance. He's way too high. Like, we all know how great Aaron Rodgers is. The greatness of Aaron Rodgers, we've seen it in flashes in recent years, but we haven't seen it consistently in a long, long time. And my last grievance is a guy that was just left off the list altogether. Matty Ice is cold-blooded. That man's been balling for year on top of year, and I understand that he has better weapons than a guy like Matt Stafford, but I like Matt Ryan a lot more than Matt Stafford as far as playing quarterback is concerned, especially considering the fact that Stafford got hurt towards the end of last year and missed almost half the season. So I think these are some small grievances, but there's so many of them. I think the people that Jeremy talked to, maybe they have some biases. I'm not going to put on Jeremy. Quality reporting, Jeremy. Nice job. But those people are dumb-dumbs.
Okay. Now, Jeremy, we're going to yell at you because you are the one who did all the interviews, and you're the only one we have access to. Let's go through some of those. Why is Lamar, a guy who was the unanimous MVP of the league last year, as low as he is?
Yeah, I tried to break through some of those potential biases because you look at Lamar Jackson. He was second in QBR inside the pocket. He was a pure pocket passer last year. But just talking to teams, they're just simply torn on him. He got a lot of number 7 votes, a lot of number 9 votes. Some executives feel that defenses are going to adjust even more so this year. He had big tight ends that he didn't have to throw to, right on the money. They just feel like his ball placement isn't as good, especially on third downs, as some other players on this list, like a Deshaun Watson, a young player that was 2 spots ahead of him. There are just people that are really torn on him. But the other side of that is, I talked to one NFC exec and said, look, he played his butt off last year, and teams thought they could sit there and stop him, and they had no chance. He's the best athlete on the planet every time he steps on the field on Sunday. Aaron Rodgers is just a guy that people say has top two, top three traits as a passer and throwing on the run. And they say those are the two most important things, arm strength and being able to roll out and throw from any arm angle. He's still probably the best outside of Patrick Mahomes at that specific thing. And then to his point about Matt Ryan, he's absolutely right. In fact, after more than 30 votes, Matt Ryan and Matthew Stafford were pretty much tied. I had to go to some tiebreakers, talk to some GMs to try to separate. Stafford pulled away just a little bit because he's got maybe some more physical traits, but that was it.
Ninkovich, let's talk quickly about Aaron Rodgers. You obviously went up against him many times during your career, and at his best, he may have been as good as anybody that we've ever seen. But where do you think he is now relative to that?
Well, he's definitely down the list. I agree with Dominique on this one. You know, you got to go with number two with Lamar. I even put Wilson at number three. So our list is very similar. I added Matt Ryan to my list as well and bumped down Stafford. So Rodgers, on my list, Rodgers is number five. I feel like he has to come down a little bit. I also think that Dak needs to come up. He has to be in front of Wentz because of the fact that he's been able to play. So When I look at this list right here, I'm more on Dominique's side than I am the other side of what the professionals seem to think that the rankings are. I feel like the players are on the same side as this. We're right here, Dominique, right here.
I love that.
Smart
you put,
guy. I like that.
I like that he put professionals in air quotes. I mean, they are actually the professionals. Whether they know what they're talking about or not is a whole separate conversation. Anyway, as we continue, coming up, Dak Prescott, is he actually better off betting on himself than signing a long-term contract? That's the question. Spoiler alert, the answer is yes, and I'll explain why. And then, why one of our guys says Patrick Mahomes would not be his first pick if he was starting an NFL franchise. Is he crazy? We'll talk about it next. You're watching Get Up on ESPN. We are back on Get Up, and time is ticking on the Cowboys and quarterback Dak Prescott to come to terms on a long-term deal. The deadline is July 15th. Earlier this morning, our insider Jeremy Fowler had this to say about the situation in Dallas.
Multiple league sources are not overly optimistic that this deal gets done. They believe that Dak Prescott signing his franchise tag tender last month concedes that this is going to be really tough to do. There hasn't been a lot of traction on both sides over the last few months. They've been far apart in both money and number of years. Dak wants 4 years. The team wants longer than that. And so they have been working on this for the better part of the year, though. So they're going to give it one last push. I expect some fireworks over those last 24 hours before that July 15th, 4 p.m. deadline.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Delicious, meet nutritious in the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each one-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code PARLAY and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code PARLAY. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
So that's the situation. Let's talk about it here. Neek and Ninkovic and my buddy Field Yates. And Field, I'm going to start with you. I've been saying for over a year now the Cowboys have screwed this thing up completely. And now I'm going to tell you just how badly they have. If Dak Prescott plays on the franchise tag for the next two seasons, he will make $7 million more than any other player in the NFL. It actually is worth his while in a huge way. All the money guaranteed, $69 million over the next two seasons. All of it counts directly against the salary cap. The Cowboys will have zero certainty about their long-term situation at quarterback. And then he can Kirk Cousins them and go do whatever he wants to at the end of that. So I think the real story here, Field Yates, is how badly the Cowboys have mishandled the situation.
And how Dak Prescott has all the leverage. Kirk Cousins is the perfect comparison to draw. So let's just say that they do tag him, not just this year, obviously, but next year as well. You mentioned the financials. That means they're also going to have a ton of salary cap space tied up to a quarterback. Beyond that, if Dak Prescott hits the open market after back-to-back franchise tags, like Kirk Cousins did before, he will likely be the highest paid, if not one of the two highest paid quarterbacks in the NFL. If you take the first deal that Kirk Cousins signed with the Vikings, and then you add the extension he signed this offseason, and draw that five-year window, Kirk Cousins will make $150 million, only trailing Aaron Rodgers by less than $1 million in that time. $150 million guaranteed, of course, number one in the NFL. Highest percentage of his contract, guaranteed number one in the NFL. So again, you are right. The Cowboys' patience has come back or could very well bite them with Dak Prescott because he has all the leverage. And when teams do things like get players to agree to a pay cut, people, fans call it shrewd business. So they say the team is a bunch of cap wizards. When players play their leverage, people call them selfish. That's not the case here. Dak Prescott has been willing to go to the mat and take this thing and string that as long as possible. He is going to be incredibly rich if he continues to play all of his leverage. He's got the Cowboys in a very vulnerable spot right now.
That's what we think. Neek, what do you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he gave them 3 years or 4 years of overvalued play, considering the fact he's a third round pick and he played like a Pro Bowler for his entire career there so far. So he has all leverage, as we all pointed out. And this is they've misused the franchise tag. This is not a player like this is not who the franchise tag is meant to be used on. Use it on a player that you may want to keep for 1 year or you keep for 2 years, a player like a running back maybe, or a player like a defensive end. Those are people that you use the franchise tag on, or maybe even a quarterback that you're not sure about. You don't use a franchise tag on a quarterback who was top five in QBR last season and the most important player to your offense. They've made a mistake. They've miscalculated Dak, and he's been very smart along with his representation. So I'm excited to see how this pans out. I think they get a deal done before the deadline because it makes no sense. The leverage only gets higher on Dak Prescott's side if they actually play with the franchise tag.
Rob Ninkovic, forgetting for a moment how good you think Dak is or isn't, what impact do you think that the quarterback, the significance of that position, playing on the franchise tag, having this obviously awkward circumstance with the franchise, what impact do you think that has on a team and a locker room?
Well, I think it could have a big impact on just your ability to go perform when you have the stress of the contract on you. Look, Dak, if Dak can go out there and perform at a high level and get that team to a Super Bowl, kudos to Dak, because as a player, when you have the stress of playing plus trying to figure out a long-term contract or just your contract in general, it could be very stressful. And look, if you're another player on that team, you're not really trying to focus on Dak's contract status. You're trying to get better yourself and trying to be a good football player to try and improve your own contract status. So I don't feel like that's going to affect the team at all. It could affect Dak Prescott's ability to stay mentally focused on the task at hand. And if he can do that and he can stay focused on football and go out there and ball out and win a Super Bowl or win a big playoff game, I mean, that speaks volumes on his mental toughness. So we'll see if they get a deal done. I don't think it's going to happen.
Not 6 days and counting until we find out. He's a young quarterback. We're going to talk about more young quarterbacks as we continue in just a moment. And of this group of young quarterbacks, which one would you take to start your team? We'll talk about that more as we continue. Let's get up on ESPN. And we're with you till 9 a.m. Eastern time. And following us, MLS action. It's back. NYFC and Philadelphia coming your way. Top of the hour here on ESPN.
The question you're trying to ask.
Be better tomorrow.
I'm not answering that. That's a clown question, bro.
Next.
Mike, why are you in such a bad mood?
What do you care?
What else do you want to know?
Next question.
I'm not going to answer any questions for you.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
It's time for Answer the Question. I will throw a series of hard-hitting questions at Dominique Foxworth, and whether he wants to or not, he has to answer them. And here's the first one. Neek, when all is said and done, will Patrick Mahomes be the greatest quarterback that ever played?
I think so. I mean, I think what we saw from him in his first year as a true starter was possibly the best season we've seen a quarterback play. He might have gone and won a Super Bowl there if it weren't for an offsides penalty. And then last year, he was playing just as well, if not better, than he was playing in that season. If it weren't for an injury, then he might have given Lamar Jackson some pressure for that MVP trophy. And then he went on to the playoffs and had three back-to-back comeback wins to win the Super Bowl. Like, that is an incredible start, and it's going to be hard. I assume that he's not going to win six Super Bowls to get to the Tom Brady mark, but I don't think he needs to win all six. If he just keeps playing like he's playing now, if he puts that up over a course of 5 to 7, maybe 10 years, he'll win a few Super Bowls, and we'll remember him as the greatest of all time.
All right, so the next question, because we know we just signed the monster deal. If there was no salary cap, how much should Patrick Mahomes get paid?
I mean, I think that he has the leverage to negotiate for hundreds of millions of dollars, because I think his value on the field is hard to measure, but I think his value to the league, I think that is also enormous. So, like, if you think about the impact that he has as a football player, it's similar to like what somebody like LeBron James has on the NBA, in that it makes the league more valuable. There'll be more sponsors who want to be associated with the NFL because of Patrick Mahomes. There'll be a lot of kids who become lifetime NFL fans because of how special this player is. And then when the NFL goes to negotiate those TV deals, they'll be able to add a premium on it because of the possibility that you might get a Patrick Mahomes Super Bowl game on your network. He is incredibly valuable. I don't think there is a salary cap that does him justice. If he were outside a salary cap, Roger Goodell would have to pitch in because he's making everybody super rich.
Okay, fair enough. And so the third question in this all Mahomes edition of Answer the Question involves a comment that Mahomes himself made on HBO's The Shop when he said, "I didn't understand how to read defenses until like halfway through 2018. I understood coverages, but being able to pick up little tendencies defense do, stuff that Brady and them have done, I was just playing." So, Dominique, I guess I would ask, how scary is it for the rest of the NFL if this guy hasn't quite figured it all out yet?
I mean, that quote makes me nauseous as a defender. Like, that's terrifying, because all athletes understand that there is a period probably around the time where you're 27, 28, where you haven't lost all your athletic ability and your mental ability is as high as it can possibly be. The idea to think that Patrick Mahomes hasn't gotten to that yet is terrifying. So he's not even close to that. At 24, he's going to learn so much more about the game. It'll make him so much more effective, if you can possibly be any more effective than he's already been. So that's terrifying. And you couple that with the fact that he is, by all accounts, a really great guy. I can't imagine how we don't end up talking about Patrick Mahomes as the legend of football. He becomes the face of the NFL for decades upon decades. He's the guy that everyone, all quarterbacks, we will measure all quarterbacks against going forward.
I'd like to actually come back at some point, not today, but at some point, talk about that piece in the middle there about the value he has to the league relative to the value a basketball player might have. It's an interesting conversation. But let's talk about other young quarterbacks this morning, if we can. We've been talking about this all day. A few more minutes left in my poll question, which is up on Twitter, at ESPN Greeny. Which of these young quarterbacks would you take to start a franchise? Dak, Wentz, Sam Darnold, or Kyler Murray? We will show you the results coming up. You can, again, about another 15 minutes to vote. But as I bring the crew back in here, Ninkovich, you really sort of set it off an hour ago, and I want everyone, including Taylor Twellman, to hear this, that you said If you were going to start an NFL franchise right now and you could have any player to do it, you would take Lamar Jackson over Patrick Mahomes. Tell us why.
I'd take him because of the upside that he has. Last year, 22 years old, the league MVP, leading the NFL in yards per carry, leading the NFL in touchdown passes. Look, he didn't throw the ball that much from the pocket. Imagine if he gets better from the pocket with accuracy, throwing the ball down the field, and understanding when to get out of bounds and when not to take some unnecessary shots. The one thing we can all agree on, number one, he's a playmaker, and he's going to make everyone around him better. When you play the Ravens, you say, how do we stop Lamar Jackson? When you play Kansas City, you say, how do we stop all the weapons that Kansas City has? So look, when I think about the best player that could potentially be moving forward is Lamar Jackson as a developing quarterback who was the MVP last year, 23 years old, very, very young, and can continue to grow in an NFL, in a league that is going to continue to change with the RPOs and the college style with quarterbacks that can move, get out of trouble. You know, as a defender, I just know how hard it is to stop a quarterback like Lamar. And if I had a team, I want to start a team like Lamar, with Lamar.
Okay. I don't know if I like the argument, but I like your willingness to make it. Before I let 12 men in here, Nick, is that true? Like, if you're preparing to play the Ravens, you say, we need to stop Lamar. And if you're preparing for the Chiefs, you say, I need to stop all these other guys, Kelsey and Hill and all of that. That actually makes some sense to me. Does that belong in this argument?
It makes some sense, but I don't think that it matters necessarily. Just because he's the best player on that team doesn't mean that he's the best player to start a team with. I think that I won't take up all the time. I'll let us get to Taylor. But I think Rob like nullified his whole argument at the beginning when he said Lamar Jackson could get better at X. There is nothing that Patrick Mahomes needs to get better at. We're done. He is already the best. You said Lamar's 23. Pat's 24. It's not like we're talking about a 30.
He's got to stay healthy. He's got to stay. Hey, patella.
He is 24. All right, let me get 12 men in here. Go ahead. Taylor Twillman getting set for MLS action coming up top of the hour, but loves the sport of football. What is your take?
First off, I appreciate anyone that is often wrong, seldom in doubt. So, Rob, I appreciate how convicted you are in your argument. However, the only thing Pat Mahomes needs to get better at, Greeny, is his golf swing. That's the only thing I've seen from him that isn't good enough. But in all seriousness, when everyone on this network in the NFL tells me wins and losses in the playoffs, how's Lamar Jackson done? You could tell me 500 yards against the Titans. You could tell me all of that. But in two playoff games, he's lost. How many comebacks has Pat Mahomes had? Why are you giving $400 million to a player if he, and you want to tell me Lamar Jackson's better than that? I understand what Rob is talking about. But from my point of view, watching games, who's more likely to get injured? Not Pat Mahomes. I get the patella last year. Lamar Jackson, as elusive as he is, if he doesn't get better in the pocket, then it's Rob, let me ask you a question. Sam Bowie or Michael Jordan? And that's a little unfair. It's a little unfair to Lamar Jackson.
That's not nice.
I just want to clarify that.
Sam Bowie was never the unanimous MVP of the NBA the way Lamar was last year. How about those two quick things, Rob? On the postseason, thus far, the postseason disappointments for Lamar. Is that not a concern for you?
Yeah, I mean, you can't put that all on Lamar, the postseason stuff. It wasn't him going out there this first year as a rookie, second year. That's the team kind of underestimating what they had to, where they had to be at after a great season. And that's coaching, that's everybody on that roster that affects the quarterback play on that, in that aspect. So, yeah, I mean, Kansas City, they're a great team, great organization. I think the Ravens with a better supporting cast, Lamar could be even better than he was last year. So look, I'm taking Lamar. That's where I was at when they drafted Lamar. I thought he was going to be the best quarterback in that draft. I think he's going to be the best quarterback moving forward in the NFL. So we'll see what happens. And I'm taking LeBron James. Okay, there you go.
Okay, why don't we leave it at that? It's a good debate, and I like it, guys. Thank you very much. Taylor, thank you, and we'll see you at the top of the hour. I need to change the tone completely to an entirely different sort of story here. Steven Jackson, the former NBA player, apologized last night for using what he said were the wrong words in defending Eagles player DeSean Jackson after a social media post that included anti-Semitic messages. Steven Jackson took the brunt of the criticism yesterday after showing support for DeSean's posts, which the Eagles called appalling. Then later last night, Steven Jackson went on CNN to apologize.
I apologize for using the wrong words. As I first stated when I got on here, I could have changed my words.
But there's nothing that said that I support any of that. There's nothing that I said that I hate anybody. I apologize for my words and I could have switched up, but that's the end of it. I know I love everybody and that's how I always stand. And I'm not going to let anybody demean my character because I'm not standing up here apologizing for a job. I don't work for nobody. I'm apologizing because what I stand for is love for all who have love for all. And I mean that. Mm-hmm. And that's just why I draw the line.
It was a portion of the interview from last night on CNN. Stephen Jackson, for the last several weeks, has been one of the strongest voices for change in this country. After the killing of George Floyd, he told CNN he was trying to speak about equality, keeping in mind the Eagles' past issues, such as Riley Cooper's use of a slur at a concert in 2013. We will take a break. And then coming up after our program this morning, 9 o'clock Eastern, soccer is back. MLS action returns here. It'll be NYFC and Philadelphia. That's 20 minutes away right here on ESPN. Tonight is fight night on ESPN. Top-ranked boxing from Vegas, our heavyweight main event, features Jerry Forrest, who's won 19 of his last 20 fights, taking on Carlos Takam. Coverage starts tonight, 8 Eastern on ESPN and the ESPN app. All right, Field Yates is here. And, Field, I want to run the hurry up. We've been talking quarterbacks this morning. Who are some of your breakout fantasy QBs this year?
Well, it's sort of a cop-out here, Greeny, because he's never actually played before in the NFL. But let's start with Joe Burrow with the Cincinnati Bengals, number one overall pick, coming off of an incredible season last year. And just look at the weapons right now in Cincinnati. You got to love the idea if he is still there, and I know he has his franchise tag applied to him, of A.J. Green, Tyler Boyd, Auden Tate, T. Higgins, Joe Mixon out of the backfield, and the Bengals are going to be bad on defense. You got to think there's a chance that all of a sudden Joe Burrow's playing from behind a ton next year with the Bengals. Moving things forward to Daniel Jones of the New York Giants, a guy who last year, in the second half of last season, was already a top six quarterback in terms of fantasy points per game. He had the second most passing touchdowns in a rookie season ever, trailing only Baker Mayfield the year before. And again, the weapons. Zero snap played last year was Saquon Barkley, Evan Ingram, Sterling Shepard, and also Golden Tate and Darius Slayton on the field. You got to figure this team, again, is very good on offense. And then finally, Kyler Murray, a player we've already been talking about in a major, major way. And I just think you look back at what he did last season, not just the NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year, but also a guy who immediately brought legitimacy to the Cardinals. He had 10 games with at least 15 fantasy points last year. He came out with absolute hair on fire for the first six games, and he only rushed the ball 93 times last season as a rookie. I think there's a chance that if you turn that into maybe 115, 120 rushes, he could be a top five fantasy quarterback in 2020.
Okay, I like that. They're all young quarterbacks, and that brings us to my poll question for this morning. I put a bunch of young QBs, including Kyler Murray, who, Field, you have been all over now for several weeks, and asked you the question, which of these guys would you take to start a franchise? Because that's been the topic here, taking a young quarterback to pick up a franchise. You got Dak, you got Wentz, you got Darnold, you got Kyler Murray. So let me bring it to my group here. Dominique, at the risk of asking an obvious question because of your affinity for Dak Prescott, if you were to vote on my poll, and I hope that you did, which of those quarterbacks would you take?
Yeah, I'd take Dak. I love Kyler Murray. I think that he is on the rise, but he hasn't shown the consistency and the health, frankly, that Dak has shown. So I take Dak out of all of those guys that you put up there. But I think Kyler Murray's on the rise. If he could put together a great season, a full great season, and his intermediate passing, I think, needed some help. So Kyler has some growing to do. If he can become as consistent as Dak, then maybe Kyler Murray. I think his ceiling is higher. But right now, of all those guys, Dak is the most trustworthy.
Okay, let me come to you on this. And Rob Ninkovich, if you were casting a vote in my poll question today, who would you pick?
I'm going with Kyler just because, look, if you go on what I was saying earlier, as a defender, I know how hard it is to stop quarterbacks that could move and get out of the pocket and run and do all the things that Kyler Murray can do well. I mean, look how fast he is right here. He's faster than everybody else on the football field. So, look, when I think about moving forward in the NFL and how the NFL offenses have changed and will continue to change, I think a guy like Kyler makes the most sense. I like Dak, but when I think about continuing to evolve an offense that's going to be multidimensional and the RPO and the run pass option things that really make defenses go crazy, I'm going with Kyler.
Field Yates, your pick.
Yeah, we might as well just keep this going, keep the Kyler Love Fest going here, Greeny, because Kyler Murray, I think, is the obvious answer in this poll. I just think that the player who has so much upside, look back to his college years, became just the second quarterback in FBS history to rush for 1,000 yards in a single season, while also for throwing for at least 4,000 yards. So I think there's a chance for, as I mentioned earlier, the Cardinals to kind of unleash Kyler as a runner. Now, I know they want to be protective because he is their franchise, but Kyler Murray, with a few more design runs, could really take this offense to the next level. And oh, by the way, this year he has DeAndre Hopkins as number one wide receiver, a better offensive line, a better receiving core around him. They drafted three rookies in 2019 who should be much better. I think the sky is the limit for Kyler Murray as soon as this year. And that division is loaded, but Arizona is going to at least make some noise for a potential wild card spot this season. That is a team that's generating all sorts of buzz as we are now on the dawn of training camp.
All right, I'm not going to try and argue against Kyler Murray because I you have to admit, sometimes in life when you were wrong, and I was dead wrong on him. I did not project him to the NFL to be anything close to what he obviously looks like he's going to be. But let's talk about the two guys whose names didn't even come up in there. Rob Ninkovich, let's start with Carson Wentz. I have multiple people, including me on this show, who have projected him to be the MVP of the league this coming season. Why no love for Carson Wentz?
Look, he's a good quarterback. I just think that he's been hurt a lot, and it's unfortunate for him. I know it's not his fault that he had to deal with an ACL and he's dealt with the back issues, but when you can't be on the team, on the field, it doesn't help your team. So when I'm thinking about building a team or a roster, you want to have guys that are durable, that you can count on week in and week out. So he unfortunately has dealt with injuries, and that's my reason that he's not the guy that I'm going with. Those injuries, it's unfortunate that he's dealt with those.
And then Dominique, if only because I can try and make you feel guilty, I'm looking here at texts from my son, Sam, and my daughter, Darnold, and they're both devastated that no one is picking the quarterback of the Jets and giving him any love. What are your thoughts on his positioning in this bowl?
First of all, you should have named your daughter Sam and your son Darnold. But that's a whole nother thing.
Flip the coin, Dominique. It could go either way. It was the beauty of the names.
It doesn't matter. But I do think that we haven't seen the best of Sam Darnold because of his situation. And if we haven't seen you play like outstanding lights out football, which we've seen many of the guys on this list do that, including Carson Wentz, we haven't seen Sam Darnold do that on anywhere close to a consistent basis. And maybe you can blame the infrastructure, but that is the situation that we're in now. We're projecting what we think Sam Darnold can be. We've already seen what Dak can be. We've seen what Carson can be. And we've seen enough, I think, in one season of Kyler Murray to project him going forward. I think Sam might be the last person I pick out of that group.
What is the projection on Sam Darnold going forward? Again, I know that I'm hopelessly biased on this, but if you watch him, he has so much talent and I think has been in by so far the worst situation of all of them. And then you factor in the fact that he had a disease last year. He had mononucleosis that cost him a beginning of the season. I think he was not fully healthy for the first half of the year. Field, what is the projection in your view of Darnold going forward?
Well, I just think that this is the year that we figure it out, Greeny, because as Neek mentioned, the supporting cast has been poor around him during his first two seasons. You mentioned the mono last year. I think the projection in the eyes of people around football is this guy has a chance to establish himself as the second best quarterback from the 2018 draft class. I think Lamar Jackson has kind of set himself head and shoulders above the rest of the five quarterbacks drafted in the first round. But beyond that is that eventually at some point, we no longer talk about quarterbacks and say the supporting cast around them is no good. Carson Wentz was the rising tide last year for Philadelphia that floated them all the way to a playoff game. If Sam Darnold's going to be the truth, and I think he has a very good chance to become that, he has to make all the players around him better to a point that we say, wow, are those guys that good or is Sam Darnold that great?
Yeah, I want to defend my guy as much as I can, but I think what is inarguable, and Jeremy Fowler said this to us yesterday, that poll that they did with the top 10 quarterbacks, if you want to project one young guy who isn't in the top 10, who feels like he's headed there with a bullet, it is Kyler Murray. And Murray is definitely the guy to keep an eye on this year. Guys, thank you very much. And thank you, everybody, for voting on the poll. Meanwhile, today on ESPN, the basketball tournament continues with another round of 16 doubleheader, 2 Eastern, Marshall alumni's herd that faces that money team. Followed at 4 Eastern by second seed Overseas Elite taking on Armored Athlete. Both games are on ESPN and on the ESPN app. And immediately following us here, just a few minutes away, we got MLS action. That's Andre Blake. He is the goalie in Philly. He was the number one overall pick in the MLS in 2014 out of nearby UConn. You'll see him in 7 minutes right here on ESPN. Just getting a busy day started here on ESPN. Coming up next, an MLS matchup is just a few minutes away. NYCFC and the Philadelphia Union. Then First Take comes along at 11 this morning. Masur Maker will be on the on that program live. Then SportsCenter comes up at 1. The basketball tournament with a doubleheader starting at 2. The Jump at 3:30. Look at this busy day. Max on Boxing is coming up tonight. Top Rank Boxing is comes your way at 8 tonight. And we cap the day with another SportsCenter at 11 Eastern. A full day of action here on ESPN. Meanwhile, my poll results come your way here. We've closed it. Look at that. Over 46,000 votes. And the winner of it is Kyler Murray. As far as which quarterback from this group you would pick to start a franchise, Carson Wentz edging out Dak Prescott. And the obvious correct choice, Sam Darnold, finishing an inexplicable fourth. Meanwhile, sneaky big news to finish up our show this morning. Our close friend, Paul Feinbaum, whom we love. There is going to be a sitcom, I understand, Paul, based on you, based on your life. Is this an accurate report that I have read?
It's close to being accurate. It is still in the production stage, as you know, all the Hollywood gobbledygook, but it's getting closer. How about that?
Okay, I think that's wonderful. A show based on the life of Paul Feinbaum. Dominique, who's the perfect actor to play Paul?
Oh, it's easy. Danny DeVito.
Okay.
Nailed it.
Danny DeVito, I like it. To play Paul, I like that. I actually like that a lot.
That's terrible.
All right, that's not bad. Now, we thought that while we had this moment here, we would each cast ourselves. Neek, if there was going to be a sitcom about you, who would play you?
I feel like I have to go with a former football player. I'm thinking Thomas Jones. Mainly, you can't see it right there, but underneath that, like, our bodies are, like, identical. I'm also ripped up. You can't tell right now because I got on a coat just like Thomas, but that's what it comes down to. We're body doubles.
Okay, Ninkovich, who would play you?
How about UConn Cornelius? How about that guy? We got the same beard going on. I mean, his is red, but it's okay.
You're such a linebacker. For me, I went with John Stewart. That's the person that people tell me that I resemble from time to time. So that's my pick. Paul, I understand you have a different choice to play me.
Yeah, I thought Jake Gyllenhaal would be perfect for you. I mean, come on, Greeny. I mean, you two look, you're twin brothers.
You know, when I was told you had a choice for me, I would have thought you were going to make fun of me in some way. That's the nicest thing anyone has said about me in a week.